Good morning. Welcome back. How is everybody doing? My name is Tom. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network at www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Surprise, surprise. Saturday morning, the day after. Friday the 13th. Saturday the 14th. Everything's all fucked up this morning. My computer's not working. I had to get a new phone. Oh, I'm working at 8, trying to podcast this morning. Nothing's going my way. A lot of opportunity to have some tantrums. Closing things hard. Making a lot of noise this morning. Shit, just arrogance has shown up. Arrogance has shown up. Byproduct of not getting my way. Arrogance. Nice to meet you. Yeah, to get a new phone. I mean, I got to get a new phone. I didn't have to. I got the new iPhone 12, the mini, little fella. I loved the mini back in the day. It's a perfect little phone. Not too big. Still having all the things I love. Someone reached out to me and asked me about that song, Indifference. So, like, that song, you know, it's weird. I love that song. I love that band. Best band ever. In Too Deep, Pearl Jam podcast on the Social Podcast Network, if you're into it. Love Pearl Jam. Love Eddie Vedder. And that song, that album, and I'm looking at the album right now, and it was such a dark part of my life. It was such a dark spot in my life. Because there was a, you know, running the streets like I was doing back in the day. So this, when this song came out, I was living out in San Diego, out in Encinitas. High on speed, drinking, running, hanging out in bars. My parents paying for everything for me. Wasn't how we had planned it. But my lack of effort is where it had led us. So my dad was basically paying for my apartment, and I was actually living in a town called Leucadia, which is just north of Encinitas, just south of Carlsbad. Small, eclectic town, just, you know, just on the other side of the tracks of the of Highway 101 that runs, you know, all the way down the coast. Actually, a great little town, Leucadia. But the problem is it was a tweaker town, a lot of meth and shit. And so I was out living in San Diego and started doing speed and just got caught up in the speed game. And, you know, nothing, you know, we're not wrecking worlds. I mean, you know, I always say that there's a lot of victims and we don't realize the victims from that kind of stuff. But I also, to me, it's kind of like casualties of war. You know, we weren't robbing and pillaging, but, you know, we were selling a little meth and kind of had our little thing going on into fish tanks and darts and drinking at the bars. And I got arrested. I got busted. Somebody, I think, told on me. And that's the speed game, right? I mean, if you've ever been in it, it's probably the same as a lot of the other drug games. But, you know, you show up, you start, you know, you buy something, you start learning who has what. Next thing you know, you start, you know, manipulating your way into relationships with the big people. And the next thing you know, you're kind of the next up-and-coming guy that has what everybody needs, and then enough people get busted, and then eventually someone will tell on you, and you get nailed, and then the cycle starts all over. And I was living, I don't know if I've told this story before, but I was living in this apartment one day, and this, I think I have told this, but I'll tell it. I was living in this apartment, and I heard all this racket, and I looked outside, and the cops were kicking in my neighbor's door. And when they saw me, they came running over and they said, you know, you got any drugs in here? And I was like, you know, and that was that whole world over there at the time. You know, everybody was on drugs. We're at that age, like 21, 22, maybe not complete drug addicts, but definitely it was part of my arsenal, part of my, you know, probably get drunk at the bar, shooting pool, having a few cocktails. And the next thing you know, anybody got any speed? Because I'm too drunk. And then, you know, off to the races. But that cycle of drug life had finally happened, and I got somebody told on me, and I got arrested, got raided. And I had a couple of guns. No, I had one. I had a shotgun that somebody had given to me. Hey, you want to trade something for this? I was like, yeah, why not? I don't care. Stuck in the closet, never to be thought of again until, you know, the cops kick in my door. And they find the gun, and then obviously charged with possession with intent and a firearm. The holy grail right there, those three. And my dad, you know, I've always said my mom and dad did too much. Well, my dad, you know, he saved my ass there too, because, you know, he got me a lawyer. And I remember going to this, my court case high. I was so delusional. I thought that what I was hoping for, a perfect scenario, would be going to work release, getting high while I'm at work, while I'm on work release, and then coming back to the jail and nobody knowing. I mean, that's how fucking stupid I was. And when we went to court, my lawyer got us, you know, they pled it down, and I think I was sentenced to work release. Everything exactly how I had wished was happening. Because I was going to still be able to get high. Nobody would know, right? Nobody would know. I remember the day I was supposed to turn myself in, I got high that morning. I couldn't refrain from smoking meth before I went into jail. I mean, that's fucking how sick I was. Turned myself in high as a kite to the work release program downtown San Diego. Got my stuff, and, you know, the guy says, yep, you're heading off to Camp West Fork. It's a probation camp in Big Bear Mountains. What? What? Are you crazy? And this was, I would have to say, I'm going to have to say like October 1st, 1993. I'm going to say that's about when it was. October 1st, 1993. And I called my lawyer, and he's like, hey, there's nothing I can do. He knew. But, you know, people like that, like my dad, lawyers, probation department, they're dealing with a fucking spoiled brat. That was me. Arrogant, spoiled brat. Drug addict. Self-centered to the fucking core, man. And I remember calling my lawyer. He's like, I can't do anything about that. And it turns out that they did that because I had the gun. It was a violent case. I'm not violent. I had, you know, the gun, like I said, somebody gave it. I traded it. It was like for shooting pheasants. But it is what it is. And the charge is The charges were what they were, and off I went to this probation camp, Camp West Fork. And looking back on it, actually, even at the time, I remember I was really scared because I'd never been really to jail, and I was full of fear. And I look back and I think it was actually, when I look back on it, it was a pretty amazing experience, quite honestly. It was up in the Big Bear Mountains. We lived in these cabins, oak and fir and cedar and whatever they were. What this place was a fire camp. Like, you know, like just now, we just went through all these big fires out in California. This would be a place where the men that are fighting the fires would come rest and sleep and eat, you know. But every morning we would get, you know, a crew from Camp West Fork would go out and, you know, pick up trash or whatever it was, work on ditches and stuff. And I remember the first day I got there, I was just so, first of all, I'm coming down, right? I'm like, because I'm sure I was high as a kite going into probation camp. So I'm, you know, this is the first time I'm really going without speed. And so I'm coming down, I'm immature, I'm out of my mind. And they have this continuous wall, right? And, you know, if you're either on the road crew, you're in the kitchen, or you're on the you know, working on the property. And they had this continuous wall. And so these guys would take wheelbarrows, those guys meaning me, we took a wheelbarrow. And believe me, at this point in my life, I have done really nothing physically hard. I mean, I used to cut some lawns and stuff, but yeah. So you would have to take the wheelbarrow and fill it up with rocks from the back of the wall and then wheel it all the way up. And the wall was probably 100 feet long. And you'd wheel the rocks all the way to the front of the wall and then pile them up at the front. Just busy shit work, man. And, but I was up at Camp West Fork, and I remember really being out of my element, really being nervous. I remember sitting around. And it's funny because, you know, all the fucking people that were in my life, I really didn't give a shit about. You know, even I had a girlfriend. I didn't care. It's fucking, you know, drug life. And, but man, when I got put in jail, I'm like, I'm writing letters every night, drawing cute pictures. Well, in the meantime, my girlfriend's back at the house getting nailed by some other up-and-coming drug addict. Because we're all just drug addicts. But I remember when that album, Versus, came out. And I was a huge Pearl Jam fan, and I remember I couldn't get it because I was in jail. But when I got out, I did 101 days, so it was like October, November, December. I think I got out like the 15th or something of January. And, you know, the whole time I'm in there, I'm going to these, you know, AA meetings and NA meetings, and you'd get these blue slips of paper saying you'd gone to the meeting. They call them chronos. And I'm going to all these meetings because I am ready to get sober. I've had it. I'm done. Look where it's gotten me. So I'm going to all these meetings, and I'll never forget how impressed I was that these guys would come in and lead a meeting, and they would have to drive probably 2 or 3 hours to get to this place. Maybe 2 hours. 2 hour drive to come here, lead the meeting, and then leave. And I was just so, I was like, you can't find anything else better to do. But there they were every week, and I was super grateful. And so I went to a lot of meetings, and I was pretty, I'm like, I'm never getting high again. I'm over it. I'm done. Wasted too much of my life on this bullshit. I finally get out. First day out, I got high. What the fuck? I mean, I'm getting high the first day out. And I remember my mom and dad coming to visit me at Camp West Fork. And they said, listen, you can either come with us. We're leaving. My dad was, you know, worked for the Defense Department out in Sereno Valley. Clinton was president. Defense Department was, you know, whittling down. He basically retired, and we moved back here to the East Coast to Rehoboth Beach. And he said, "Listen, you can go with us, and we'll help you out, or you can go, you can stay here, or you'll be on your own." And I said, "I better probably go with you." So my parents left while I was still in jail. When they got when I got out, I called them, and then my dad's like, "All right, you know, start packing. Let's get you out here." I'm like, yes, got high that day, couldn't pull my head out of my own ass to get the fuck out of San Diego. And fucking, you know, I got lucky by the grace of God because I was getting high. We were right. I felt right. I picked up right where I had left off before I went to jail. But my dad would call me every day. "Come on, man, let's go. Get your shit together." He rented me a U-Haul. He rented me a car trailer. Everything I needed, my dad took care of. Me and my girlfriend trying to pack up all our shit, all of our tweaky shit, fucking tweaker shit that we had, tweaker furniture, tweaker garbage, tweaker wire, everything, tweaker. But that song, boom, 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 it reminds me of like, there was like this last week before we were in San Diego, before we left San Diego. And if anybody that's out there is recovering from using speed, you probably remember like these quiet nights where the whole town would be sleeping except for, you know, the tweakers. And, you know, with the curtains pulled, you don't want anybody to know you're up. And just boom, boom. And how those first words, "I will light the match this morning so I won't be alone." I mean, all the only thing that you have in your life is a match. But I get it. That separation from people, that addiction and depression and anxiety. The song's pretty dark. And it brings back a lot of memories. And unfortunately, the memories that it brings back, I miss. Yeah, you can take alcohol away from me. I get it. That shit is bad. But I still enjoyed my days in San Diego. Listen, you can't have a life on speed. We've seen plenty of examples of what the outcomes of that is. But, you know, what a life. Living in San Diego, on the beach, in an apartment, your parents are paying for it, you're getting high. It's the 90s, right? It's like the beginning of the 90s. The 90s were really great. Music was great. Metallica was great. Guns N' Roses. Pearl Jam, all these great bands, were young. I miss those days. I don't miss alcohol. Mm-mm, I don't. But I miss those days. And my wife and I were talking last night, and we were watching something, and I think it was a Joe Rogan podcast, and he had this guy on, Hinchcliffe, I think. Tony Hinchcliffe, I think that's how you say it. And, you know, Joe Rogan will have people on the podcast and, you know, he'll drink with them. He pours them. "Jamie, get us some something." I don't know if it's whiskey or bourbon. I don't even know the difference. But, you know, he'll pour them something and Tony Hinchcliffe, he's like, "All right, you know," I don't know if he said salute or cheers, but they, you know, they tap glasses and I just watch the glass go to Tony's mouth. Right up. And you can just see Tony tilt it and just take a little, like almost a taste. Mmm, that's good. Oh, that's good. And for a fucking brief second, I'm like, I wonder if I could drink like that. Just sip it. Maybe that was my problem. I was drinking it too fast. Just to sip might work. I never liked whiskey, so maybe that'll even be a better reason, because I can just sip it, and I don't like it, so I'm not going to sip too much. My wife looked at me. I think she looked at me with a little concern. I'm like, I'm not going to do that, babe. I'm just saying. Disease, man. There's some good times, and the disease likes to remind me of the good times. Pushes bad times to the back. And it's the same thing with that those days on the speed, man, because that we had a lot of, I mean, I had a lot of fun. Tweaking. Not good for you, but it was pretty fun. But it's not what this is about. This is about being sober. Let's see what we can do. Let's read. It's funny, I got the new phone, and it feels so funny. It's like small. The mini. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Daily reflections. D-I-A. D-A-I. What am I writing? Daily reflections. Reflections of the way. All right, here we go. Here we go. Okay. Okay. All right. Uh-oh. We did something. Oh, here we go. October 14th. October 14th. I was listening to one of these podcasts the other day, and my God, I struggle reading these things. So, you know, listen, go check them out on your own. Read them on your own. I like to kind of just dump my thoughts and then look at the daily reflections and see how the daily reflections kind of reflect on what's going on in my day. But please go. I mean, I'm just going to the dailyreflections.com, or no, I'm going to, what is this? Just basically the AAA website with daily reflections, or I typed in daily reflections. Go find it, read it yourself. Don't rely on, I mean, I'm a terrible reader. All right. Anyway, November 14th, intuition and inspiration. We ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought for our, see, I already fucked up. We ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. I invest my time in what I truly love. Step 11 is a discipline that allows me and my higher power to be together, reminding me that with God's help, intuition and inspiration are possible. Practice of the other step brings on self-love. In a constant attempt to improve our conscious contact with a higher power, I am subtly reminded of my unhealthy past, with its patterns and its of grandiose thinking and false feelings of omnipotence. When I ask for the power to carry out God's will for me, I am made aware of my powerlessness. Humility and healthy self-love are compatible, a direct result of working step 11. Yeah, I agree. I agree. What did that? That was, and then it disappeared. It's always about, to me, a relationship with the higher power or spiritual awakening is a byproduct. You know, it's a byproduct. You know, if you want to find dents in the ground, you move the pumpkins. Dents are byproducts of big pumpkins. Spiritual awakening and relationship with the higher power is a byproduct, for me, of humility. Humility to me is surrender, suffering. One man's suffer is another man's treasure. And I think it comes with age. I'll watch people like they will fucking do everything and anything that they can to avoid doing something that they don't want to do. Whereas you get older, you're like, I might as well do it. It's just age. Byproduct of doing something that's inconvenient. The suffer. The struggle. What are we looking at here? I don't even know. I'm sorry about this confusion this morning. The computer didn't work. I've done something now to the computer. Everything's not working. But we'll get through it, right? We will get through it. I hope everyone has a great day. You know, this too shall pass. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. What do I need to change today? Maybe nothing. It's awfully early to be making big changing decisions. I'm excited. The Masters is on. Have a great day.
How much difference does it make? How much difference does it make? Until their will grows tired.